information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law.
You will listen and obey.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard yet.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
The financiers were power motivated and therefore assisted any political vehicle that would give them an entree to power. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the Sites and Show. It's October 16th, 2009, and we got all your news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, alternative news, interviews, and the new world next week, CERN, social nets, food safety and lawsuits, Saddam, CIA, Sinn Féin, Mussolini and MI5, History Mystery, DMV, FBI, NORAD, FEMA, APF, Obama-Saya troops, tech and TV, deals, drills, and the dark side, dead malls, dollars and CEOs, swine flu support, revolt, NYC can't, war whores, and how to brainwash a nation. It's all here on episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Just because we're you.
juxtaposed with you. That was the lead single from the Super Furry Animals 2001 release, Rings Around the World. I have to say, that's absolutely one of my favorite records. And just a moment before the song finished, I hopped on Wikipedia to check out the stats from it and discovered that, yes, of course, it did come out July 23rd, 2001. Jesus, and I had just become the music/program director at my old radio station back east, WSHC, 89.7 FM in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And that was just a mere 2 months before the day that changed everything. Anyway, let's flash forward to now, my friends, and let me formally welcome you to episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 16th, 2009. Like I said, my name is James Evanpilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the sites and the show MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com, the growing kingdom in the Media Monarchy. And of course, we're coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, thanks to the Portland Radio Authority. It's almost been 3 years of doing shows here on the Portland Radio Authority, so let me take a moment to actually give a huge thanks to all the folks who volunteer and make this station happen. PRARadio.org. And then the amazing list of affiliates. ZeroPointRadio.com, blasting it out online live, as well as 92.3 FM and 1500 AM in Casper, Wyoming. It's 11 AM Mountain Time. And the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net, 1 PM Eastern Time. And thanks to Free Radio Olympia, my neighbors to the north, in Olympia, Washington, 98.5 FM, FrOlympia.org, playing Media Monarchy Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. 93.9 FM, KBFR, Boulder, FreeRadio.com. 87.9 in Canton, Georgia, Ground Zero Radio. You can hit them up at stickam.com/groundzero. Not to be confused, not affiliated with a man, Clyde Lewis, and the Ground Zero Lounge, from right here in Portland, Oregon. But we've also got 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California, berkeleyliberationradio.net, and cascadiapublicradio.org.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You can hit me up on Face, Space, Twitter, Tube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. So again, I implore you to check out that record from Super Furry Animals, Rings Around the World. They're from Wales. They're amazing. And the Flaming Lips rip them off. So even though I went back 8 years to grab a favorite track of mine, there's tons of new media. I just haven't had a chance to go through it and play new tracks for you. But new records from Ravenettes and Air, the Avett Brothers, Monsters of Folk. I can't even remember all of them. Hope Sandoval, Yola Tango. On and on. So we'll probably hear from some of those in the not-too-distant future. And hell, maybe we'll even make another musical monarchy episode like we did back on 125. Hey, maybe we'll do that for 150. Who knows? So enough ramble babble. You're here for the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. So to all the new and returning listeners, I thank you. I welcome you. I welcome you aboard. I welcome you back. I thank you so much for the support. And we're going to talk a little bit about support in just a few minutes. But, of course, we always like to glance at the news, what's happening this morning, October 16th, 2009. Oh, Balloon Boy. The family insists it's not a hoax. We'll touch a little bit more on Balloon Boy later in the episode. It's a distraction, yes, but it's media memes and hoaxes. So it's important to at least take a moment to check it out. More importantly, however, would be that Bank of America has posted $2.2 billion, that's a B, in losses. And, of course, worldwide saber-rattling coming out of the Middle East with those undocumented rogue nuclear states. I do see on the side here, teen shot to death after high school stabbing 52 minutes ago from MSNBC. We will, of course, cover the waves of murder and mayhem that we've been tracking since the Ides of March. As things get scary, quite simply. Another thing I definitely want to mention is, again, thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com. Head over there. There's a chat room. It's easy. You click the button. You type your name and you're in. Nothing to install. You're up and on and you're listening and you're interacting and you're commenting and you're sharing and arguing and all those things. Again, Zero Point Radio also carries James Corbett, The Corbett Report, Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge, and a ton of other great shows, music shows, lifestyle programming. Again, big hat tip to those guys. So as we were just talking about connections, a lot of new projects, a lot of new work coming from collaborations with other folks. Just released last night another new special interview episode from MediaMonarchy.com. I talked to Zachary Fillingham of GeopoliticalMonitor.com. Really smart guy. It was our first conversation. It's about an hour long. Again, a great little standalone interview episode from MediaMonarchy.com. We talk about essentially how countries are merely a collection of interest groups. And while some nations' actions are ruthlessly pragmatic, others are foolishly idealistic. So I didn't have time actually to prep a clip of my new interview with Zach Fillingham. But check it out. It's posted up again. If you subscribe to the page, subscribe to the podcast, you'll get it. If you're subscribed, you've already gotten it. More things coming up. We're going to have another interview with Albert Lanier when he gets back from the Hawaii International Film Festival. We're going to be talking about secret societies and pop culture. Also working on setting up an interview with Freeman Fly of Freeman TV. That's going to be amazing. Again, so many amazing, hopeful, positive things happening. Again, many hands make light work. And we'll return to that note in just a moment. But now we're going to jump to episode 102 from the Corbett Report. Know Your History, Iran-Contra. What happened in the 80s doesn't stay in the 80s. Iran-Contra was and is an historical moment that reaches forwards and backwards in time to connect some of the key political players of the last 50 years and, of course, exposes the shadow government that has been in operation for decades. Another great episode from Corbett Report, replacing the Orwellian context of history and putting Iran-Contra in its proper context. I believe HistoryCommons.org has been working on a timeline of Iran-Contra. And again, you may think if you're my age, you were young in the 80s. You remember just being this silly Oliver North thing, and I remember, God, the barbershop my mom made my brother and I go to, they had some, you know, poster of Ollie North, and they played him up as this sort of like comical American hero, showing him shredding documents for Uncle Sam. And it's all so funny. It's all so funny. But if you take 10 minutes, I challenge you, take 10 minutes and go into Iran-Contra and look at Oliver North and look at his connections to continuity of government, Rex 84 and FEMA. Of course, the great clip of Jack Brooks. I believe two of the main pieces within episode 102 from Corbett Report hits Bill Moyer's seminal The Secret Government video, as well as cover up behind the Iran-Contra scandal. Those will help pretty much put it into context. James Corbett also has a book coming out very soon. Amazing work. Again, I'm just stoked to be working with folks, even though we're halfway across the world, or all the way across the world. He's in Japan. I'm in Oregon. We're bringing you info, and it's blasting out all around. Reportagebook.com. Now, perhaps it's reportage, if you will. 10 essays on the New World Order coming soon from James Corbett. But that's not all, folks. Posted up as an addendum to this episode 102 from Corbett Report is what I mentioned last week might not see the light of day, but it has, and I'm glad that it has, was our pilot episode for our new video series, a collaboration we're calling The New World Next Week. 10 minutes or less, YouTubeable, where James Corbett and I go over some of the big news in an even more kind of bite-sized form. Again, putting the info out as many ways as possible. Folks out there may not spend a bunch of time scrolling down a website and hitting links. Some folks may not be able to listen to even a weekly two-hour radio show. But a less than 10-minute video report from the Jameses, The New World Next Week. So the pilot episode we did posted up October 11th. Then James had another video, another entry in his Economics 101 series, this time talking to Richard Cook. This follows great informative clips on Economics 101 with folks like Bob Chapman, Michelle Chosudovsky, G. Edward Griffin. And then we made our second episode, October 15th, New World Next Week. Again, I don't have clips from any of these, so hopefully just mentioning them to you, if you haven't checked them out already, will whet your appetite enough without me playing clips for you. So there's two New World Next Week episodes to check out. There's a new interview with Zachary Fillingham of GeopoliticalMonitor.com. On this most recent New World Next Week, we went over some of the things that we're going to hit coming up in just a few minutes, like CERN and Monsanto and Saddam and Ahmad Salem. So you get the idea. There's a lot happening, and I am stoked. So let's do it. Let's hit and get to it for my newest site, running since June of this year, cyberspacewar.com. CERN scientists arrested for alleged terror connections. This coming from theregister.co.uk. An atomic physicist who worked at the European Organization for Nuclear Research for 6 years has been arrested on suspicion he had links to an Al-Qaeda affiliate in North Africa. The unnamed man had been assigned to an analysis project for the organization better known as CERN. Since 2003, the group said in a press release, he had no contact with anything that could be used for terrorism, it added. He was arrested two Thursdays ago in the French city of Vienne. His detention came as two brothers, also suspected of having ties to Al-Qaeda, were arrested in Vienne on a warrant issued by an anti-terrorism judge at the Paris prosecutor's office. Police didn't release their names or nationalities, and I don't know if we know their names or nationalities yet. I believe, actually, we do know their nationalities. They were French citizens of Algerian descent, I believe. The AP reported they were 25 and 32, respectively. And, of course, as a little reminder for you, shortly after coming online last year, CERN's LCH, or the Large Hadron Collider, was downed by a faulty electrical connection between two magnets in the 17-mile donut-shaped atom smasher. It has been under repair ever since. A CERN spokeswoman assured the AP there were no indications of sabotage and that the arrested physicist had access only to the experiment he was working on and not to the tunnel itself. CERN is providing support to French authorities investigating the arrested man. There's more from the AP and the New York Times and theregister.co.uk. As well as a little flashback link for you, where you can hop over to MediaMonarchy.com and see all the posts that have to deal with CERN. The most recent one that I see is going back to February of this year. CERN Atom Smasher relaunch delayed to September. Obviously, it's delayed a little longer than that. Again, if you need reminding, CERN and the Large Hadron Collider, this was the quote-unquote end-of-the-world machine that some worried that the moment they fired it up, well, you know. Strange connections, the god Shiva, the destroyer, statue outside. We remind you of Robert Oppenheimer. Some of the scientists got death threats. Yeah, we're back into September 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. I'm basically scrolling down all the CERN-related posts. Will Super Collider cause the end of the world on September 10th, 2008? And all these things, all these bizarre connections. We now add in even more bizarre connections with Al-Qaeda. I should throw in a media sidebar note here, as we were talking about sabotage in the factory. Went to check out Steven Soderbergh's latest film, The Informant, and it's all about sabotage and price fixing at Archer's Daniel Midland. It was fantastic. Steven Soderbergh, obviously being one of the best directors working today, he could make 4-hour docudramas about Shay and 90-minute movies about prostitutes. And then he follows it up with a movie about the food industrial complex. You know what else? It also had Scott Bakula of Quantum Leap and Patton Oswalt and Buster from Arrested Development and the Smothers Brothers. Tons of people. So, okay, I digress. Let's continue on cyberspacewar.com and run down an ugly list of headlines posted up this last Tuesday, the 13th of October. So it's DEF CON 1013, moon updates, social nets, and hack attacks. Of course, a few updates last week. Blowing up the moon, the Nobel Prize, and all of that. From the Associated Press, moon crash, public yawns, scientists celebrate. Cloud of confusion over success of NASA moon bombing. That's from the Times Online. A funny bit from freedomfiles.us. And an article an article by James Burns called The Moon Is Not Enough. Of course, a play on The World Is Not Enough. It's a satirical piece making jokes that the moon attack was actually attacking E.T. enemies, and our dear fearless leader, the Obamasiah, got the Peace Prize for saving humanity. They just can't tell everybody, that's why. That satire, The Moon Is Not Enough. Moon orbiter detects pole plunge hot spots in dark bottom, again from theregister.co.uk. NewsTrackIndia.com covering cybugs. And soon they will access areas where people can't go. You get it, like cyborgs, cybugs. From Ars Technica, Facebook ensnared in two social networking patent disputes. We've seen a lot of this swirling around, whether it's Facebook or Skype. Reservella, the shadowy company behind the Pirate Bay, again from Ars Technica. From Threat Level, Big Box Breach, the inside story of Walmart's hacker attack. That's an interesting one. Of course, we know Walmart is a part of the North American Union's critical infrastructure. But then we even have some updates added to the list of moon updates, social nets, and hack attacks. Lawmaker urges Obama to appoint cybersecurity coordinator. We've been hearing that drum beating for several months now. And as long as many more several months ago, we were speculating and hypothesizing on the show that we were going to see some type of bio attack or a massive cyber attack. And we got hit with the swine flu first. But that more urging of a cyber czar is from FCW.com. The internet is about to die. Literally, die! Again from ArsTechnica.com. One research group continues to claim that the sky is falling in the internet thanks to high data growth rates, and that network neutrality means the whole internet could just go away. The article by Nate Anderson tries to sift through the hyperbole and looking for little kernels of truth. From The Telegraph, Sweden lost its internet connection. The whole of Sweden lost its internet connection for almost an hour when routine maintenance broke every single .se address. This was this last Monday, October 12th. Every Swedish website went down and no emails to or from Swedish domains could be received. Around 900,000 domains were affected. The problem was caused by an incorrectly configured script in an update of the .se domain, according to Pingdom, a Swedish web monitoring company. But that couldn't happen here. Mozilla detects insecure Firefox plugins. Also from The Register. And we covered quite extensively several months ago with a lot of new breaking news and analysis and interviews with James Corbett of Corbett Report on cybersecurity and the cyber 9/11. More now from the Boston Herald. Partners of Carnegie Mellon's Sci-Lab warned that digital 9/11 threat growing. The specter of a digital 9/11 is what still keeps the former U.S. acting cybersecurity czar up at night. That's Melissa Hathaway telling a gathering of Carnegie Mellon University's Sci-Lab corporate partners this last Wednesday in Oakland. It's not can it happen, it's when, said Hathaway, former senior director for cyberspace at the National Security Council. The internet's been around for 40 years now, and threats are outpacing defenses with a volume and velocity that we never imagined. Hathaway headed cybersecurity projects for W and Obama. She authored the 60-day cyberspace policy review that Obama released in May. Hathaway left the public sector in August and is now president of her own company in the District of Criminals. But Melissa Hathaway wants to wake up the masses before a major event occurs. That always seems to be the standard line from our talking head misleaders. It's not a question of if, but when. We don't want the proof to come. Or what is it? Smoking gun, mushroom cloud, you know. You've heard it all before. Again, that's why we watch the drills. That's why we watch the involvement of the military. That's why we've extensively tried to shine light on the information operations roadmap. Again, the idea that now the military is fighting the net like an enemy weapons system. But the very last note here on cyberspacewar.com, Troy, Missouri student disciplined after creating a website to bully another student. That's from stltoday.com. Furthering the cyberbullying meme. But now we shift gears over to foodworldorder.com, and one of the stories that we hit on the most recent New World Next Week video series. It's a question that, unfortunately, we should know the answer to. Why are Monsanto insiders now appointed to protect food safety? This coming from Mercola.com. And while health care reform is finally on the table, and an organic farm has for the first time been planted on the White House lawn, of course, we now know that it's been ruined by sewage sludge, with a link for you to the flashback on foodworldorder.com. All those things ostensibly good, but now there are an unsettling number of foxes being appointed to guard the U.S. healthcare food industry hen houses, foxes that have entirely too many connections to Monsanto. The chemical manufacturer turned agricultural giant that is slowly, but surely, gaining control over the world's population one seed at a time. Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack is now the Secretary of Agriculture, an appointment that took place despite massive public outcry. What was needed for an effective Secretary of Agriculture was someone who would develop and implement a plan that promotes family-scale farming and a safe, nutritious food system with sustainable and organic vision. What we got was yet another politician who's already made room in his bed for the industry lobby. Links in there to organicconsumers.org and democracyinaction.org. Then the second, one that we went over extensively back in July of this year. That would be Michael Taylor, former Vice President of Public Policy and Chief Lobbyist at Monsanto, is the new Senior Advisor for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Who is Michael Taylor? He's the person who, quote, oversaw the creation of GMO policy, end quote, according to Jeffrey Smith, the leading spokesperson on the dangers of GM foods. Again, flashback link in there to July of this year on Food World Order, foodworldorder.com. Obama taps former Monsanto VP to head FDA working group. And then the third, in another ironic turn of events, if that's the word for it, it's rumored that Pennsylvania Agricultural Secretary Dennis Wolf may be appointed to the new Undersecretary of Agriculture for Food Safety, the top food safety post at the USDA. Not only did Dennis Wolf attempt to ban RBGH-free labels, but OCA, again, organicconsumers.org, points out that he has, quote, also worked to deprive communities the right to ban toxic sewage sludge, factory farms, and GMOs. Also more from Unbossed.com and the Huffington Post. That's change, folks. Monsanto and the food industrial complex being brought into positions by our new progressive leader. Where's the outcry? The next one from foodworldorder.com is the most recent posting there, posted yesterday evening, and it's a great update to a story that we hit back in August of this year. Dole has finally dropped their fatuous lawsuit against the documentary called Bananas. Not to, of course, be confused with the Woody Allen film, Bananas. This from EcoWorldly.com, and they are thrilled to report that the Dole Food Company has finally dropped their ridiculous lawsuit against the filmmakers of the powerful documentary Bananas. And you can hit up BananasTheMovie.com. It appears that the courts have ruled that the fatuous defamation lawsuit of the criminally inclined Dole was proven to be nearly as lacking as the multinational corporation's integrity. A few minutes before they posted this on EcoWorldly, they had gotten a tweet from one of the film's Swedish directors, Fredrik Gerten. Dole dismissing the Bananas lawsuit, it seems. Over the last few weeks, the filmmakers have received tremendous support from both the Swedish government and many businesses. More on that from thelocal.se, assuming those .se addresses are working. And it clearly all had an impact, saying, quote, "The support we've received from people who've sent us money and encouragement has been critical. Having members of the Riksdag take up the issue has also been great, and the pressure on Dole has increased." In a prepared statement, Dole said it decided to withdraw the lawsuit, quote, "in light of the free speech concerns being expressed in Sweden, although it continues to believe in the merits of its case." More on that from the Associated Press. So, good news. Dole dropping their lawsuit against the documentary Bananas. And again, the flashback to August of this year on foodworldorder.com. Bananas exposes Dole's poisonous practices. The last story on foodworldorder.com definitely got a little bit of attraction action up on facebook.com/media monarchy from the Big Brother Corporation, the BBC. That's why Orwell called it that. Food production must rise 70%. Food production will have to increase by 70% over the next 40 years to feed the world's growing population, the United Nations Food Agency predicts. The Food and Agricultural Organization says if more land is not used for food production now, 370 million people could be facing famine by 2050. The world pop is expected to increase from the current 6.7 bill to 9.1 bill by mid-century. Climate change, including floods and droughts, will affect food production. The FAO said net investments of $83 billion a year, an increase of 50%, had to be made in agriculture in developing countries if there was to be enough food by 2050. You can go straight to the UN Horse's Mouth, FAO.org. We also have more, of course, from the Associated Press. And the unfortunate truth behind things like this that I think we've mentioned before. If they wanted to feed the world, they could do it. With the same shock and awe speed that we can deliver death and destruction, we could deliver a banana. That's not in their interest. And that's, of course, why we're going to have to take it back into our own hands. You probably heard it said that at least back in the Great Depression, a lot of folks still had a little bit of a green thumb. They weren't that distanced from it. They had been in a garden. They had worked on it. They had done it with their parents and probably with their own kids. That is probably not so much the case anymore, my friends, as we've all moved to compact urban centers, my stupid self included. If you want to get an idea, just watch the somewhat dated feel, yet wholly, unfortunately, frighteningly, possibly accurate, Soylent Green. Packed into compact cities, food scarce, the only jobs you have are being a corrupt snitch, like Charlton Heston is, snooping around, sneaking around. And you wait for the day when you can get in line for the fake food, for the GM food. Ha ha ha, Soylent Green is made of people. Yes. But it doesn't have to be. It can also be made just straight out of a lab. And if you get rowdy when they run out of rations, that's when they bring out the scoops. That's why I drink, you know, why this stuff all kind of goes together in a way. That's why I call it media monarchy. I've been a media guy all my life, TV, film, music, theater, all of it. Some, of course, more than others. So I know a lot more about that. So for the last 8 years, as I've looked into quote-unquote alternative news, alternative history, the real news, you can look at it and go, oh, well, that's been in a book, that's been in a film, and it's no accident. But we're not going to go down the whole predictive programming road, but of course, I'm sure I'll have tons of other media references for you as we go along. Although, as I now glance at the clock, if I don't shut the hell up, we're never going to get through all of this wonderful, horrible news. Such as this. The last story that we mentioned in the most recent New World Next Week. That's my new weekly 10-minute video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, The New World Next Week. We went over this story. My way of raw story, and there's links to Cranes Detroit, Click on Detroit, JusticeForDonHannah.com, Google, and on and on. So taking it from the top, from a raw story, woman imprisoned for selling to Saddam was working for the Central Intelligence Agency. A Detroit-area businesswoman serving a 6-year sentence in federal prison for selling goods to Iraq during the embargo against Saddam Hussein was actually unwittingly working for the CIA. According to NBC affiliate WDIV, Dawn Hannah of Rochester Hills, Michigan, was working for a CIA contractor when she arranged for telecom equipment to be sent to the Middle East in 2002 and 3. The person claiming to be that contractor, Imad al-Yawar, last name Y-A-W-E-R, says that he was working on a CIA plan to sell communications equipment to Saddam that, of course, would be bugged with espionage instruments. The plan was for the agency to locate and kill the Iraqi leader. The whole idea was, once they get to Saddam, send a smart bomb and blow him to smithereens, al-Yawar told WDIV. Al-Yawar's Jordanian company, AdvancedTechnicalSystems.com, was the partner with whom Hannah worked to deliver the communications equipment. Dawn Hannah, imprisoned for selling to Saddam, was actually working for the agency.
Tonight, a secret agent is coming forward with shocking new details of a CIA plot. Coming forward for just one reason. He says a local woman is in prison, and he believes she's innocent. This is the face of a young Rochester Hills woman named Dawn Hanna. Prosecutors say it's also the face of an American traitor trying to help the enemy on the verge of a war. But the defenders have discovered there is a much bigger picture. It's a tale never told before. A covert CIA mission, espionage, and secret agents attempting to topple Saddam Hussein. But they needed this local woman to get the job done.
I was willing to go to that extreme. Sacrifice my life.
Tonight, his secret agent putting his life on the line, revealing his face and his name. Imad El-Yaour, coming forward against the advice of almost everyone.
And all those people gave their lives. The Americans and Iraqis and others, for what? So that innocent people go to jail?
Dawn Hanna was forced to leave her family in Oakland County to report to prison in Kentucky. We were in the room when Dawn was allowed a brief phone call home for medical reasons. Locked up for a horrendous crime, she says she did not commit. Dawn, convicted in this Detroit courthouse by 12 jurors from Southeast Michigan for selling a high-tech communication system to Iraq and Saddam Hussein. Tonight, you will hear what the Michigan jury never did. The plan to sell Saddam Hussein communications equipment was our idea. The United States CIA secretly trying to give Saddam Hussein a communication system with hidden spyware installed, allowing the U.S. government to listen in on Hussein's conversations.
The whole idea was once they get to Saddam or his thing, send a smartphone and threw him out of prison.
Imad is the operative the CIA put in charge of getting the equipment. He contacted Dawn Hanna in Rochester Hills. Dawn and her brother Darren had a small company with a reputation for acquiring and delivering equipment overseas.
She's sitting in prison knowing she didn't know this was going to Iraq.
Darren was also criminally charged, but the jury acquitted him due to a lack of evidence. He said his sister was told specifically the equipment was for a company in Turkey.
They just carved that out and made up a whole different story. It's absolutely awful. It's un-American.
And now this CIA operative coming forward confirming the story.
I've never at any time did I mention it to Dawn or anyone else where it's going.
Imad says it was his responsibility to lock, cheat, and steal if necessary for the United States to get the gear in Saddam's hands. He says no crime was ever committed.
The only thing that is worth something. Those countries have the thing of liberty and freedom.
Darren is still in Rochester Hills fighting for his sister's freedom. Their father, Toby, is in shock.
As a father, my daughter is sitting in prison and just like a part of me is gone. And I want my daughter back. That's all I'm asking for.
Toby came to this country because he hates what Saddam Hussein has done. He fought in wars to defeat the dictator. And now his daughter is in a U.S. prison locked up. Toby says it's because the jury never heard the real story.
I just want my girl back. I wanted, to come back home.
Prosecutors say most of this new information is classified and under seal. By law, they can't talk about it. But U.S. Attorney Terrence Byrd was compelled to come forward, go on the record, and say the jury had more than enough evidence to convict Dawn Hanna.
The jury concluded that the defendant was guilty of intentionally violating the trade embargo with Iraq, that she has specific knowledge of that, and that essentially her defense regarding Turkey was not true.
Burke says Dawn Hanna was sentenced to 6 years in prison because she committed a serious crime, adding that the judge found this new information not important enough to warrant a new trial. That decision is under appeal. Kevin Dietz, Defenders.
Now, there's so much in there, I can't even wrap my brain all around it, but you should at least gather that in a lot of these cases, the folks you think you're working for aren't the folks you're working for. And we, of course, heard mentions of Turkey, which, of course, reminds me of Sibel Edmonds' testimonies on the Turkish intelligence nexus with the agency in the events of 9/11. Again, more on that. You can hit up Justice for... That's the number four. Justice for Dawn Hanna. And there's no H at the end of Hanna. H-A-N-N-A. Selling to Saddam, but working for the CIA. That's just the start of our strange history mystery notes. because now we got MI5 planning, or rather they planned, I should say, to blow up Sinn Féin headquarters. This from the Belfast Telegraph. The British Security Services, MI5, I believe they're sort of the counterpart to our FBI. They do the domestic thing, while MI6 and the CIA do the outside the country thing, again, ostensibly. Beginning again. The British Security Services plotted to blow up Sinn Féin's Dublin headquarters during the height of the Troubles, a former undercover police officer has claimed. An IRA informer, that's the Irish Republican Army, an IRA informer was asked to place the bomb in the offices on Kevin Street in the summer of 1971, according to George Clark, a retired Royal Ulster Constabulary Special Branch Detective Sergeant. The counter-terror officer who left police more than 20 years ago said the security services eventually decided not to go through with the attack, but not before he had put the proposition to his source. He made this and other claims in his new book, Border Crossing, newly published memoir of his time working for the RUC's intelligence unit, the Royal Ulster Constabulary. Border Crossing, True Stories of the RUC Special Branch, the Garda Special Branch, and the IRA Moles. One of the things I note in my show notes for my new interview with Zachary Fillingham of GeopoliticalMonitor.com is just how much I know that I don't know. So let's take a moment quickly and read about the Troubles. The Troubles was a period of ethno-political conflict in Northern Ireland, which spilled over at various times into England, the Republic of Ireland, and mainland Europe. The duration of the Troubles is conventionally dated from the late 60s and considered by many to have ended with the Belfast Agreement of 1998. Violence, nonetheless, continues on a sporadic basis. The principal issues at stake in the Troubles were the constitutional status of Northern Ireland and the relationship between the mainly Protestant Unionist and mainly Catholic nationalist communities in Northern Ireland. The Troubles had both political and military or paramilitary dimensions. Its participants included politicians and political activists on both sides, Republican and Loyalist paramilitaries, and the security forces of the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland. Just a quick little informational historical note on the Troubles, which of course reminds me now that Ireland is yet again in a position dealing with their constitution and their absorption into the European Union. We of course went over last week the now shady results of the Lisbon Treaty. We went over the videos and photos and accusations of suspicious activity in the pre-dawn hours before the election, strange ballot box movements. You can see the video for yourself. The Troubles, indeed. A quick list of headlines on a history mystery posting, Columbine, JFK Jr., the DC sniper, and more. Susan Klebold, Dylan's mom, one of the Columbine killers. She wrote an exclusive piece for the Oprah magazine. I don't think the whole piece is online. Yes, I did go to the Oprah magazine website to see if I could find this article. It's on the newsstand. You'll see it at the grocery store checkout. But we've got reports on the article, at least at this point, from the Associated Press and the Washington Times. Columbine killer's mom, no inkling son was suicidal. And Susan Klebold, haunted by son's acts. But what I really want to point you to is the flashback to April of this year and the Media Monarchy interview with Evan Long, the creator of the amazing and informative and infuriating and disturbing documentary called The Columbine Cause. JFK Jr. died due to pilot errors, says Quebec author. That's from CNews out of Canada. Anytime we mention JFK Jr., I, of course, point you to John Hankey's amazing documentary, The Assassination of JFK Jr. A lot of things I bet you never knew about the case, now 10 years old. Again, from the Washington Times, this time 7 years later, the sniper attacked a remembrance. This is a massive, almost 10-page piece from the Washington Times. And again, I can recall quite well. In the fall of 2002, was working on the sound design for a theatrical production called Betty's Summer Vacation. That was, of course, tailor-made for me. It was all about the media, mind control, living in a sitcom. And as I was working on the sound design, I was putting in a lot of strange clips and news pieces contained within that sound design, which, again, I haven't listened to in years and years and years now, were some of the newest at the time. They were literally, I grabbed them from the news that day and put them into the sound design, and they were cemented in for the show while the DC sniper was still running loose. So buried within the foley of that sound design, if you will, are references to what you'll now remember and recall as being the erroneous reports of it being a white van. And without going any deeper into this, of course, anytime you hear mentions of the white vans rolling up, spooks! The last history mystery note on this. Suspect in 1968 hijacking at JFK is captured. We jump to CNN. A man accused of playing a role in the 1968 hijacking of a Pan Am flight from New York to Puerto Rico was captured Sunday, federal officials said. Luis Armando Peña Soltran, 62, or rather 66, surrendered to the feds at JFK after exiting a flight from Havana, Cuba. It's the same airport from which Pan Am Flight 281 took off more than 40 years ago. Additional details on Soltran's apprehension were not provided by authorities. And I will quickly admit and mention, never heard of this case, so perhaps this bears more investigation. Suspect in 1968 hijacking at JFK is captured. So those are our history mystery notes. And if I glance back at the news on this October 16th, 2009, I see that not much has changed in the last hour. It's still all Bank of America and Balloon Boy. And we've got now another disturbing Police State International posting. We're going to go into the FBI, the DMV, FEMA, NORAD, APF, and so much more. But perhaps what I should do before we go down the hole we're now just about into hour number two of episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com. Like I said, it's October 16th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Coming to you, of course, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, as well as ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FrOlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, StickAM.com/GroundZero, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org. And again, I'll tell you, because it's important, and it's amazing, and it keeps me going, and it impresses me every day when I get some new message or some new news lead from all the folks, literally now all around the world, checking out the show. I appreciate it. Again, it's what makes all of this happen. It's what makes it worth doing. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. Just put in Media Monarchy, all one word, as your keyword or username, and you'll get there, and you'll get to me, and we'll make another important connection. So, yes. It's now time for Police State International, FBI, DMV, FEMA, NORAD, APF, and so much more. We're going to start with, of course, another piece from the Associated Press. Those guys who hate us spreading information online for free, they don't like that. But having said all that, from the Associated Press, posted up October 8th, so I didn't catch this in time for last week's show, but here it is, right here, right now. Police stop more than a million people on the street. Dateline, New York. A teenager trying to get into his apartment after school is confronted by police. A man leaving his workplace chooses a different route back home to avoid officers who roam a particular street. These and hundreds of thousands of other Americans in big cities have been stopped on the street by police using a law enforcement practice called stop and frisk. That alarms civil libertarians, but is credited by authorities with helping reduce crime. Police in major U.S. cities stop and question more than a million people each year, a sharply higher number than just a few years ago. Most are black and Hispanic men. Many are frisked, and nearly all are innocent of any crime, according to figures gathered by the Associated Press. And the numbers are rising at the same rate crime rates are dropping. Ronnie Carr's experience was typical. He was fumbling with his apartment door after school in Brooklyn when plainclothes officers flashed their badges. "What are you doing here?" one asked as they rifled through his backpack and then his pockets. The black teenager stood there, quiet and nervous, and waited. Carr said the officers told him they stopped him because he looked suspicious peeking in the windows. He explained that he has lost his keys. 20 minutes later, the officers left. Carr, of course, was not arrested or cited with any offense. And he said, quote, "I felt bad, like I did something wrong." Civil liberties groups say the practice is racist and fails to deter crime. Police departments maintain it is a necessary tool that turns up illegal weapons and drugs and prevents more serious crime. They're profiling. So, of course, if you're driving while black, or God forbid you get locked out of your apartment, of course, you'll recall the Gates fiasco several weeks back. It's the officer-friendly kind of style. "Oh, we're just checking out. Is everything all right here?" It's a PR stunt. But ultimately, it makes people not want to go out. And you hear about people altering their routes because they want to avoid the cops that are always hanging around. So it's a good way to keep people off the street, keep you in your house, watching TV, staying out of trouble. Further down the list, phone company is arm of government, feds admit in a spy suit. That's from Threat Level, but also from Raw Story. U.S. considers phone companies, quote, arm of government. The U.S. government doesn't have to reveal info about phone companies that may have spied illegally on Americans because those phone companies are an, quote, arm of the government, end quote, the U.S. Justice Department argued in a recent court case. In a lawsuit over the Bush administration's decision to give immunity to telecom companies over its warrantless wiretapping program, the Justice Department argued that it didn't have to publicly reveal what it discussed with phone companies because those discussions were interagency communications. So this article goes on, and there are PDFs of court filings and more and more and more from the EFF. But the question I ask you is, Has your new president done anything to turn that back? From the New York Daily News, NYPD tracking cell phone owners, but foes aren't sure the practice is legal. It's all legal. It's not fascism when we do it. Los Angeles anti-terror program sparks controversy, this being from Xinhua, from out of China. Civil activists last Thursday, October 8th, voiced concern over an anti-terror program launched by the LAPD, saying the program could lead to, oh, look, racial and religious profiling. The LAPD launched the so-called iWatch program on October 8th to encourage people to report suspicious activities and behaviors. Rat on your neighbors. More great work from Tom Burkhardt at Anti-Fascist Calling, battening down the hatches, secret state monitors protests, and represses dissent. From the Plugged In video games blog from Yahoo, Fit to Fly? Balance board tapped to detect shifty characters at the airport. So again, you're being profiled on the street if you're making furtive movements. If you look suspicious, we're going to talk to you. If you're in the airport and you look mad at me, if you look a little bit impatient, it looks like you're with Al-Qaeda. Who's who in the Big Brother database? That's from James Bamford, of course, the author of Puzzle Palace and Pretext for War. FBI delves into DMV photos in search for fugitives. That's from the Associated Press. Again, if you've gotten your driver's license photo taken recently for a new license, like stupid me has here in Oregon, they've got a biometric photo. Biometrics. That means they use the math of your face to track you. FBI building system that blows away fingerprinting. I'm sure that's not related. Driver's license photo database used by FBI. That's from darkgovernment.com. And now a few more updates again on the strange tale of American police force, which sounds like some bad Parker and Stone movie. APF withdrawal effort to run Hardin, Montana jail. That's from BillingsGazette.com. Attorney General drops investigation into American police force. That's from MercuryNews.com. But above the law, question mark. Hilton, the head of APF, refused to cooperate with the Montana Attorney General. That's from Paul Joseph Watson. But a little bit of mainstream coverage. Or a little bit more mainline coverage from TalkingPointsMemo.com. Behind the Montana jail fiasco, how private prison developers prey on desperate towns. With the unraveling of the deal for the shadowy American police force to take over and populate an empty jail in Hardin, Montana, it's pretty clear that the small city got played by an ex-con and his supposed private security firm. But an investigation by Talking Points Memo into how Hardin ended up with the 92,000-square-foot facility in the first place suggests that long before low-level card shark Michael Hilton ever came to town, Hardin officials had already been taken, for a ride by far more powerful sets of players. A well-organized consortium of private companies headquartered around the country which specializes in pitching speculative and risky prison projects to local governments desperate for jobs. And yes, that's a Simpsons episode. We'll make another mention, but first, a mention, of course, about the 2010 Olympics coming up very soon. From our other neighbors to the north up in Vancouver, Canada, proposed British Columbia law would allow big fines and jail time for Olympics violators. That's from the Canadian Press, and we're going to get a little bit more on that when we get to geopolitics. But a note from Chuck Baldwin, I believe he was the Constitution Party candidate for president last year. He's got a piece posted up last Friday, Ravenwood Comes to America. And interestingly enough, He's talking about the late CBS television series called Jericho. In the TV show Jericho, where nuclear attacks hit the United States, which of course later you find out was an inside job, Ravenwood, that was their Blackwater-esque group. And then we have the American Police Force story coming out of Montana, and interestingly enough, CBS News was pretty much the only major news network that covered the APF story. Waco siege enforcer to rule over global police force. This being more from Paul Joseph Watson, sourcing the New York Times and talking about a guy named Ronald Noble, Secretary General of Interpol. And the UN and Interpol met to discuss the formation of a, quote, global police force, end quote. And Ronald Noble might get to be the head of it. And Noble, of course, ties to the Waco massacre. 6-year-old suspended for bringing camping utensil to Delaware school. DelmarvaNow.com, as well as the Times Online out of the UK, covering this story. Delaware school backs down after outcry over ban on pupil with a lunch knife. He essentially brought his little Boy Scout knife that has like a spoon and stuff on it. But in the new Terror America, that's wrong. You could be a terrorist. You could be a 6-year-old terrorist. How long are we going to put up with this police state garbage? That's my question. And when you see things like this done to the least among us, like little innocent kids or old ladies in wheelchairs dumping their water at the airport, this is all only going to go on and build as long as we put up with it. Well, they came for the 6-year-old kids with Boy Scout spoons, and I didn't protest because I wasn't a Boy Scout. And then they came for Grandma, but, you know, I didn't say anything. You know how that ends, right? Former right-wing leader warns of religious right violence, saying, quote, anyone can be killed, which, of course, that's true. But they're also prepping and priming us for the probably yet to come massive wave of homegrown errorism. Again, as we've been reminding you for the last year, well before the new Democratic puppet came in, that when the fake conservatives are in power, the enemy's over there. But when the fake progressives come in, the enemy is here. And we, unfortunately, are looking like we're being prepped for some kind of repeat of the 90s with Waco and McVeigh and OKC and Ruby Ridge and militias and all that. I should note, yet again, we're nonpartisan here. Both sides of the controlled left-right paradigm are completely corrupted, blackmailable, controlled, and they prop each other up. And as long as we keep voting for the lesser of two evils, you're still going to get evil. NORAD exercise planned for the East Coast and the New England area starting, that's right, Wednesday, and running supposedly until today. It's all a part of Amalgam DART. Again, we've been covering and mentioning many, many of these drills for the last several months, all tying into Ardent Century, Vigilant Guardian, all of those things. Pittsburgh G20 was, of course, a beta test for a police state. We've got a press release from FEMA, who I believe we'll mention at the very end of the episode. We're on MediaMonarchy.com reading this Police State International posting because it had their name in the title. FEMA to evaluate Maryland's readiness. So, terror drills coming for the land of Mary. And the last note from globalresearch.ca, sweatshop conditions in U.S. cities. We have a whole posting essentially devoted to just the updates and some of the fallout of Obamasiah and the Prince of Peace Prize. So we'll run down these quickly and then get to the more recent updates and clips on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. But some of the Prince of Peace Prize updates: after Nobel nod, Obama convenes Afghan War Council. That's from the AFP. That's irony, kids. And like Bill Hicks would say, it's irony on a base level, but it's a hoot. I can get a hoot from it. Chris Floyd noted the same thing we did last week, that, well, Nobel was the inventor of dynamite, after all. We also have the Nobel Peace Prize being seen as a reward for not being Bush. That's from the Washington Times. Warmonger wins Peace Prize. New article from Paul Craig Roberts. Critics smell politics in decision to honor Obama. It's from the Washington Post. We have a clip from Raw Story and Raw Replay. Obama accepting the award as a call to action, even though most have noted he should have said no. He should have declined it. But that ship has sailed, my friends, and we're going to find out something interesting, I believe, in a few moments related to some Nobel updates. Kurt Nemo notes that Obama deserves an Oscar, but not a Nobel. Bought and paid for, from Washington's blog. Truth is fiction. Peace Prize fits Obama like a velvet glove. That's from Winter Patriot. Obama wins Nobel Peace Prize. Hell freezes over, from joshfulton.blogspot.com. And the last bit, something I didn't have time to edit for you. Another interview with investigative journalist Wayne Madsen in Russia Today, where he asks the pertinent question: why would you give a peace prize to a guy at the helm of wars of aggression? Riddle me that. So now we get to even more Obamasiah and the Apostles of War updates. Troops, tech, TV, and more. Again, from the French agency Press. Obama approved 13,000 more troops to Afghanistan. In an unannounced move, President Barack Obama is dispatching an additional 13,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan beyond the 21,000 he announced publicly in March, the Washington Post reported this last Monday. The additional forces are primarily support forces, such as engineers, medical personnel, intel experts, and military police. The Washington Post said, bringing the total buildup Obama has approved for the war-torn nation to 34,000. This, of course, all ties in with Killer McChrystal and the Afghan surge. And you've heard him. He says this is the right war. This is critical to America's security. So if you believe that, my friends, I have numerous bridges for sale here in the beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon area. You should hit me up on MediaMonarchy.com for more on said bridges. Obama vows to openly allow gays into military service. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. And there's raw video from Raw Story on gay rights marchers divided on Obama. And I don't believe I've mentioned it, and I'll quickly try and mention it here without going too much into depth. What a commentary on the bizarro world that we live in right now, where up is down and black and white is left and right, and it doesn't make any bit of sense. Speaking generally here, and I can't speak for large groups of people, I can only speak for me, but you essentially have a group of folks who generally are progressive, Democrat-leaning folks. You now have them fighting for their right to be included in wars that we know are based on lies. Now, my girlfriend did put me in check on this note. She was saying it's not so much important that it is the military, but it's the concerted effort across the board to be given fair treatment, whether it's jobs or homes or kids or military or what have you. Just find it mighty, mighty strange. And wouldn't it perhaps be a more powerful force to have a march and say, we don't want to fight in your stinking war of terror that we know is based on lies that you said you were going to end if we voted you in, liar. But hell, that's just me. Obama loosens missile technology controls to China. That's from the Washington Times. We always wonder when we saber rattle about who's got what, and Saddam had chemical weapons. Oh, that's right, because we sold it to him. Oh, my God, Ahmadinejad and Iran, they've got weapons. Oh, that's right, because Rumsfeld sold some to AQ Khan. We have the receipts. And good God, it just gets more amazing. Here's a little flashback from a Kenyan newspaper. It's the Sunday Standard, and you can find it at eastandard.net, E-A-S-T-A-N-D-A-R-D, eastandard.net. A little article from the Sunday Standard out of Kenya from Sunday, June 27th, 2004. Kenyan-born Obama all set for U.S. Senate. Kenyan-born U.S. Senate hopeful Barack Obama appeared set to take over the Illinois Senate seat after his main rival, Jack Ryan, dropped out of the race Friday night amid a furor over lurid sex club allegations. You can definitely get more on the destruction of any and all Obama opponents by checking out Webster Tarpley's great books, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, and Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography. Gallup poll says Obama's numbers slightly spiked after his Nobel win. But interestingly enough, from Breitbart.com and their big Hollywood blog, leaked network memo reveals Obama controls your television set. On September 10th of this year, the Entertainment Industry Foundation, EIF, posted a press release with a link for you, informing the world that from October 19th to the 25th, we're about to soak in it, baby, that's next week, more than 60 network TV shows will spotlight the power and personal benefits of service. And that this unprecedented block of TV programming is the first wave of a multi-year I Participate campaign. On the face, it all sounds rather benign in that silly liberal do-gooder kind of way. The networks have launched these kinds of campaigns before, and other than some clunky exposition awkwardly inserted into your favorite shows to meet the mandate, no harm, no foul. But this year, there are a couple of new strangers in town. Volunteerism and service. You've heard of them. The names have been bandied everywhere since Obama took office, and this internal memo from the EIF, posted up, dot document, right there for you, shows that the network showrunners and the entertainment industry are all well acquainted and eager to introduce both as a vast an audience as possible. Introduce them to a vast as audience as possible. So I stumble over that a little bit, but the list is there. And you can see who's doing what. I digress a lot, but my friends, they don't call it programming for nothing. So speaking of that, with another clip from Raw Story, surprise, surprise, the White House says that Fox News is a, quote, arm of the Republican Party.
To be honest, I do not feel that I deserve to be in the company of so many of the transformative figures who've been honored by this press.
I think there's an element of ridiculousness to the award.
I think that everybody is laughing. Our president is a worldwide joke.
Conservatives hate America. They should love it or leave it, obviously.
I loved Obama's faux humility in his little statement today, but I think he should have said no.
So what is the president's team doing to push back against the press, especially the folks at Fox News? I spoke earlier with Anita Dunn, the White House Communications Director from the North Lawn. Anita Dunn, welcome.
Howie, thanks for having me.
As we heard, President Obama on Friday said that he did not deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. It wasn't something he sought. And yet you have all these conservative commentators saying this is a joke, it's an outrage, it's somehow a bad thing. What's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, a week ago on the previous Friday, many conservative commentators had been rejoicing in the fact, celebrating in the fact that the United States didn't get the Olympics. One week later, they seemed to be somewhat bitter at the fact that, you know, an American president was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. So I think people will draw their own conclusions about the reflexive negativity on the part of some commentators, regardless of what happens. Well, I think the bigger point is, and the president himself said this, was that he was surprised, as I think most of the press corps was. He feels that he, you know, didn't really deserve it, as I think, you know, there are many people who feel that this is still, particularly in terms of this presidency, it's the first year. So I think that, you know, that those people who are saying, you know, this is really quite unusual, this really does seem to be, a big surprise to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, that's not out of bounds. Absolutely not out of bounds.
Okay.
I think what the president also said, though, today,
let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
Short on time, and we'll play what the president said. We're talking about conservative commentators, so let's talk about Fox News. You were quoted this week in Time magazine as saying of Fox News, it's opinion journalism masquerading as news. What do you mean masquerading?
Well, you know, Howie, if we went back a year ago to the fall of 2008, to the campaign, that, you know, it was a time when the country was in two wars, that we'd had a financial collapse, probably more significant than any financial collapse since the Great Depression. If you were a Fox News viewer in the fall election, what you would have seen would have been that the biggest stories and biggest threats facing America were a guy named Bill Ayers and something called Acorn. I mean, the reality of it is that Fox News often operates almost as either the research arm or the communications arm of the Republican Party. And it's not ideological. I mean, obviously, there are many commentators who are conservative, liberal, centrist, and everybody understands that. What I think is fair to say about Fox, and certainly the way we view it, is that it really is more a wing of the Republican Party.
So, yeah, of course, duh. But if Fox is a arm of the GOP, then of course we know that the foundation-funded liberal blogs and media outlets are pretty well connected to the fake left as well. An exclusive piece to blacklistednews.com from Sherwood Ross goes into the questions about possible Obama and CIA ties, where we note quickly that even according to Wikipedia, upon graduating from Columbia University, Obama for a year, quote, held a position as a research associate, end quote, in Business International Corporation, a CIA front organization. The company is alleged to have kindly paid off Obama's college loans for him. Obama worked in BIC's Financial Services Division, where he edited Financing Foreign Operations, a global reference service, and wrote for Business International Money Report, a weekly financial newsletter. According to an article in the October issue of the fantastic Rock Creek Free Press out of Washington, D.C., again, hat tip to Jeffrey Long and rockcreekfreepress.com for promoting media monarchy, Wayne Matson wrote, quote, through its contacts with leading liberals around the world, Business International Corporation sought to recruit those on the left as CIA agents and assets. At any rate, the New York Times reported in 1977 that a big company official admitted providing cover for CIA employees. Another interesting note from another talking head, and of course, we'll put it on the record and see how it shakes out. Hillary says she won't run again.
But I can't help but think, 9 months into this administration, having campaigned so fiercely to be president yourself, that there can't be moments for you where you wish you could make the decisions yourself.
I have to tell you, it never crosses my mind.
Never.
No, not at all. I am part of the team that makes the decisions.
Will you ever run for president again? Yes or no?
No. I mean, this is a great job. It is a 24/7 job, and I'm looking forward to retirement at some point.
No retirement yet, however. Today, Secretary Clinton is in Belfast giving a major speech on the peace process in Northern Ireland, and she expects to visit Pakistan by the end of the year, Meredith. So she's got a busy agenda.
Check
ahead.
Her in a few more years, though, on that running for president. We'll see.
And she was definitive there.
She was. Sorry, and thank you very much.
We've got more from the Wall Street Journal. Rage at the government for doing too much and not enough. We've also got an interview with Colbert and Supreme Court Justice Scalia, who says that the cross no longer represents Christians. Maria Shriver breaks her husband's no-cell-while-driving law. I believe she got busted by stupid tabloid site TMZ. CNN is reporting. Another clip, another bit. Speaking of foundation-funded liberals, oh, here's an audacious move. Arianna Huffington says that Joe Biden should resign over Afghanistan.
Arianna Huffington of the Huffington Post, who's written a rather provocative essay today, Arianna. It involves the Vice President of the United States. Tell our viewers in the United States and around the world what you think.
Well, Wolf, you know, reading the cover story on Joe Biden in Newsweek this week, I was really moved by his clear opposition to the war and some of the methods he's using in the Situation Room in the White House to try and actually shift the president's decision. So given that, I thought it would be really important if the vice president, instead of waiting until after the fact to write the inevitable mea culpa memoir, telling us how forceful he was behind the scenes in opposing the war and how sorry he was that he wasn't listened, that he can actually do the right thing right now, and if this president chooses to escalate, he should resign. That would be such a powerful statement of principle that would really make a fundamental difference, because, Wolf, there is nothing more important than a matter of war and peace like this, a matter that affects our national security, and Joe Biden could provide the leadership that is really needed if we are going to change course.
Arianna, wouldn't you argue, though, that Joe Biden has had a tremendous amount of influence? He's changed the arc of the conversation, and that he's more likely to influence the President of the United States being inside that room, not only now, but in the future, than he would if he just said, oh, okay, fine, I'm just going to resign.
Yeah, we'll see about that. A few more updates on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. More on the government propaganda infesting network TV shows this coming week. We've got more from Paul Joseph Watson, where he goes into the press release from EIF, the Entertainment Industry Foundation, where it actually gives the list of the shows that are going to be propagandizing you next week. Like from ABC, it pretty much looks like tons of their shows and a lot of their soap operas, as well as Funniest Home Videos, Brothers and Sisters, Cougar Town, Grey's Anatomy, and a bunch of other crap. CBS's Cold Case, CSI Miami, Ghost Whisperer and Numbers, Fox's America's Most Wanted, Bones, Brothers, Cops, So You Think You Can Dance, and NBC's 30 Rock and The Office. 30 Rock, of course, being named after the building for the Rockefellers. Here's a little Nobel update for you from the AFP. Majority of Nobel jury objected to Obama Prize. So I suppose without going further into that article, which is sourced to a Norwegian tabloid, Verdens Gang, is that 3 out of 5 objected to it. So then how did they give it to him? I don't know. HTRnews.com goes into Obama's unrestrained FBI and asks the question, is this America? And a great new op-ed piece from Naomi Klein, of course, the author of No Logo and The Shock Doctrine, also behind a great documentary you should check out called The Take. She writes pieces for The Guardian every now and then, and her new one is called Obama Isn't Helping. At least the world argued with Bush. So speaking of the world, let's turn to the world of geopolitics, deals, drills, and the dark side. Police State Canada 2010 and the dark side of the Olympics, coming from the new website nauresistance.org. Of course, again, the Vancouver 2010 Olympics coming very soon. As we noted the headline just a little bit ago, already passing the powers to make sure they can detain and harass and stifle whomever they please. Worried about President Blair of the EU? It may be even worse than that, reports the Telegraph and all the other little sub-appointments that are going to come. Times Online has Berlusconi backing Blair to be president of Europe. Interestingly enough, Tony Blair was snubbed after a memorial for the Iraq dead. Of course, he being a war criminal involved in a war of aggression. All you got to do is check out the Downing Street memo. One of the ballsier guys on the world scene is, of course, the president of the Czech Republic, Václav Klaus. He, of course, also doesn't believe in the climate control scam. I will not sign Lisbon Treaty, says Czech president. That's from the Times Online as well. Germans seek to oust Czech president Václav Klaus over the EU treaty. You know, the Lisbon Treaty, the thing we mentioned earlier that has video of ballot box tampering? Yeah, that one. China detects deadly nerve gas at their border with North Korea. That's from the AFP. Gunmen kill six and take hostages at Pakistan's army headquarters. That's from the Los Angeles Times. How the Afghan election was rigged. From Time Magazine. India's biggest ever war drill with the United States begins. That's from TelegraphIndia.com. Russia notes on Danger Room that they will nuke aggressors first. Turkey cancels joint drills over Israel's Gaza crimes. Meanwhile, U.S. real stage massive missile drill. That's U.S. and Israel joined at the hip in a suicide pact for the end of the world. Livni supports Prime Minister's efforts to fix those Turkish ties. That's from the Jerusalem Post. The previous report about U.S.-Israel staging a massive missile drill is from Iran. That's from Press TV. The addendum we note on our latest New World Next Week episode is the follow-up to the story about Ahmadinejad having Jewish roots. The Guardian put out a piece that essentially rips to shreds the story that the Daily Telegraph reported Mahmoud Ahmadinejad revealed to have Jewish past. And the soap opera gets stranger. But not only stranger, and in a silly soap opera way, and all our misleaders, it's a lot uglier than that. And again, you just have to look at all the admitted things throughout the year before, throughout the years, before you ever utter the stupid phrase, "But why would they do that to people?" Israel forced workers to drink uranium.
Juice laced with uranium is just one of many clinical trials allegedly conducted at an Israeli nuclear power plant. Well, a human rights activist has accused the plant's management of forcing its workers to take part in life-threatening experiments or for the sake of nuclear developments. They also claim the government and the military are involved in a cover-up of the test.
It's taken a decade for them to speak out, but workers at Israel's nuclear reactor facility claim their managers gave them uranium to drink as part of an experiment. With no medical supervision or explanation of the risks, the workers now want compensation.
They told me that the managers of the laboratory approached a few workers within the laboratory and asked them if they are ready to volunteer for a research that they are doing. And when they said yes, they were asked to drink juices, grapefruit and orange juice with the uranium.
Professor Steve Benfich is a doctor and human rights campaigner who says Israel still lacks the laws to protect its people against clinical trials like this. He believes the claims are plausible.
My guess is that the idea was to see what is the amount of uranium that is present in drinking water or in something ingestible. That would show by the regular detection methods.
The government's response is confusing, insisting it never happened, while suggesting an investigation.
The Israeli authorities deny the claims. In a statement emailed to our officers, they explicitly state there have been no human experiments at the Negev Nuclear Center. It's more, they write that the CEO, the Israel Atomic Energy Commission, has decided to put together an expert team. They won't give any statements until the investigation is complete.
So we'll see if we ever hear any more on that. But again, we've gone over all the documented, admitted human experimentation that has happened from our misleaders, to put it nicely. The ringworm children, the Tuskegee syphilis experiments, Operation Big City, you know, where we test gases on people without telling them about it. It's just like a drill. As we shift gears and as I look at the clock, it's not looking too good to get over and through all the info we still have left on this 145th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, but we're going to do our damn best. Econocrash, dead malls, dead dollars, and dead CEOs. The world's largest shopping mall is empty. By way of Cryptogon.com, there was a series on PBS called Utopia. And so, not only the Mall of America, but I believe the world's largest shopping mall is in China, but guess what? There's no one in it. Deadmalls.com. UK faced bank runs and riots as RBS and HBOS neared collapse. That's from Bloomberg. Timmy's telephone travesty. That would be Geithner. And phone records show that he only talks to Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and JP Morgan. He's your Treasury Secretary from Goldman Sachs, appointed by Obamasiah. Thanks. Marcy Kaptur, one of the latest over the last year or so of folks like Alan Grayson, and maybe even to a lesser extent, folks like Barney Frank waking up to the fraud of the Federal Reserve. Marcy Kaptur notes that there has been a financial coup d'etat. That's from Washington's blog. U.S. dollar condition terminal. That's a piece from Zachary Fillingham of GeopoliticalMonitor.com. And again, I tell you, check out my recent interview with him. Dollar reaches breaking point, banks shift reserves, again from Bloomberg. Gold the big picture and debunking the too big to fail myth, both from Washington's blog. Media mogul Sumner Redstone to sell nearly $1 billion in stock, yet maintains his empire. Los Angeles Times as well. A few days ago, we were all excited. Oh, God, the Dow closed above 10,000 for the first time in more than a year. Are our friends at the Plunge Protection Team working overtime? Probably. More on Tiny Tim Geithner. His aides made millions on Wall Street. That's from one of the main elite mouthpieces, the Financial Times, FT.com. Another dead CEO, Lazard. L-A-Z-A-R-D, Lazard CEO, Bruce Wasserstein, dead at age 61. Goldman Sachs breaks record with $16.5 billion bonus pot. That's from The Guardian. More from Washington's blog. The ongoing cover-up of the truth behind the financial crisis may lead to another crash. Oil settled above $75 and set a new high for the year. And an amazing clip. You never know when somebody is going to step out onto the media stage and drop a little truth bomb in the info war. But who knew? Appearing on Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO and the author of a new book called I Am Not Psychic, and of course an actor you've probably seen quite a bit of, Richard Belzer exposes the Federal Reserve.
Real quickly, in 1910, Senator Aldrich on his private train brought a bunch of billionaire bankers, the Morgans, all these different people of Warburgs, down to this place called Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia, and they figured out a way to create the Federal Reserve because central banks were looked down upon by the people and they caused a lot of problems. By creating the Federal Reserve, they convinced the Congress and the people that the Federal Reserve is a government arm. It's not. They borrow money from private banks. We're owned by banks, and you can't alter that. John Kennedy wanted to stop borrowing, wanted to stop using the Federal Reserve, use silver certificates to determine the value of the dollar, and print money through the Treasury. So they exploded his head. But the point is...
Well, that's quite a connection you made.
Yeah. Well, let's forget the Kennedy part. He did want to do that. Okay. He did want to buy the Federal Reserve.
I've heard a lot of reasons why he got shot. I never heard that.
Well, that's the reason. And that's the scam. It's not billions of dollars the banks control. It's trillions. You don't mess with the banks. And the Senator Durbin said this place is owned by the banks on this floor of the Senate. You know better than anyone.
And now we learn that Richard Belzer is a Fed truther. Welcome aboard. That's awesome to hear. So, obviously, he has read G. Edward Griffin's seminal tome, The Creature from Jekyll Island. One quick update on the econo crash from CNN. FDIC fund in the red until 2012. We have noted that the Federal Deposit Insurance Company ain't got a whole lot of insurance going on those deposits. In the red until, of course, the year 2012. Fascinatingly enough, my friends, as we noted week after week after week, FDIC Friday, as the number inched closer and closer to 100, now it seems like 2 weeks have gone by and we have not heard about the FDIC closing down a bank. Is it because they now don't have the ass to cover it? Or is it perhaps they've done it but don't want to announce it because they don't want to cross the psychological barrier of triple-digit bank closures in the year with months still left to go? Just a thought. Let's try and blast through. Oh, God. There's so much. There's so much. Oh, I don't know what to do. Well, how about this? It's live radio. We're shifting around. I'm figuring out what I can cram in. We've only got 15 minutes left on episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com. Still, tons to go over. Things like swine flu updates, alerts, revolts, and support. All the latest 9/11 updates, NYC can't, myth busted, and more. We've got U.S. military resistors and their recruiting goals, more on the drug war, history mystery, media memes, murder and mayhem, the balloon boy, brainwashing. So since we're not going to get to all that stuff, I'll at least throw out the reference in one of the newest updates that I've seen on the strange, interesting case of the balloon boy. Anytime there's media hoaxes, we should at least cover it and pay attention. It's, of course, a media circus right now, and the little kid in question, Falcon, he threw up on live television this morning just because of all the pressure. So as the world spins and stares at the balloon boy story, it makes us all want to puke. So let's make a 2012 reference from the Associated Press, since we just mentioned FDIC being in the red until 2012. 2012 isn't the end of the world, Mayans insist. Apolinario Chile Pixton is tired of being bombarded with frantic questions about the Mayan calendar supposedly running out on December 21st, 2012. After all, it's not the end of the world. Or is it? Definitely not, the Mayan Indian elder insists. Quote, I came back from England last year and man, they had me fed up with this stuff. And it can only get worse for him. Next month, Hollywood's 2012 opens in cinemas featuring earthquakes, meteor showers, and a tsunami dumping an aircraft carrier on the White House. At Cornell University, Ann Martin, who runs the Curious Ask an Astronomer website, linked up for you, she essentially says people are scared. It's too bad that we're getting emails from fourth graders who are saying that they're too young to die. We had a mother of two young kids who was afraid she wouldn't live to see them grow up. But the aforementioned Apolinario Chile Pixton, a Guatemalan, says the doomsday theories spring from Western, not Mayan, ideas. A significant time period for the Mayas does end on the date, and enthusiasts have found a series of astronomical alignments they say coincide in 2012, including one that happens roughly only once every 25,800 years. So yes, we have the big 2012 film coming up. A big disaster epic where, of course, they love blowing up the White House in these disaster movies. Predictive programming, perhaps? So let's do one last amazing gear shift here on episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com as I rearrange segments to fit everything in, or fit everything in that I can, rather. Let's have a little instructional moment here. How to brainwash a nation. This comes to us by way of federaljack.com, and we'll have a little editorial note from InfoWars after the clip. The video posted up, again, called How They Brainwash a Nation, is just under 10 minutes. And this amazing interview was done back in 1985 by, of course, the aforementioned G. Edward Griffin, recent guest on CorbettReport.com and author of The Creature from Jekyll Island. This amazing interview was done back in 1985 with a former KGB agent, and his name is Yuri Bezmenov. With a link, he's got his own Wikipedia entry. He was trained by the KGB in subversion techniques. In this interview, he explains the four basic steps to socially engineering entire generations into thinking and behaving the way those in power want them to. And it's shocking because our nation has been transformed in the exact same way and followed the exact same steps. How to brainwash a nation.
Our conversation is with Mr. Yuri Alexandrovich Bezmenov. Mr. Bezmenov was born in 1939 in a suburb of Moscow. He was the son of a high-ranking Soviet Army officer. He was educated in the elite schools inside the Soviet Union and became an expert in Indian culture and Indian languages. He had an outstanding career with Novosti, which was the, and still is, I should say, the press arm or the press agency of the Soviet Union. It turns out that this is also a front for the KGB. He escaped to the West in 1970 after becoming totally disgusted with the Soviet system, and he did this at great risk to his life. He certainly is one of the world's outstanding experts on the subject of Soviet propaganda and disinformation and active measures. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean by that?
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see. There is no mystery. There is nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many detectives of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активное мероприятие in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community and their country. It's a great brainwashing process which goes very slow and is divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. It takes from 50 to 20 years to demoralize a nation. Why that many years? Because this is the minimum number of years which requires to educate one generation of students in the country of your enemy, exposed to the ideology of the enemy. In other words, Marxism-Leninism ideology is being pumped into the soft heads of at least three generations of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already.
How to brainwash a nation. That's just a few brief moments with former KGB agent Yuri Bezmenov, talking to G. Edward Griffin. And again, we'll note, they don't call it programming for nothing. Now, a little contextual update and note by way of InfoWars. As documented by the late Anthony C. Sutton in his book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, Russian Marxism was created by Wall Street. Quote, The question now in the readers' minds must be, were these bankers also secret Bolsheviks? No, of course not. The financiers were without ideology. It would be a gross misinterpretation to assume that assistance for the Bolsheviks was ideologically motivated in any narrow sense. The financiers were power motivated, and therefore assisted any political vehicle that would give them an entree to power. This effort appears to be the foreign counterpart of Carol Quigley's claim that J.P. Morgan infiltrated the domestic left. Morgan also infiltrated the international left. End quote. Again, that is from the late Anthony C. Sutton in his book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. I believe he has other books called Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, documenting again the connections between the international financiers funding both sides. Whatever two sides those may be, it all ties in with the Hegelian dialectic, sometimes referred to as problem-reaction-solution, also referred to as thesis-antithesis-synthesis. They create the problem to elicit the reaction from you so that they can offer their ready-made, already written, sitting on the shelf, waiting for the catalyzing, catastrophic event that, of course, is not always, it's always not a question of if, it's when, remember. So when they get their event, they can bring down the Enabling Act. So when the Nazis burnt down the Reichstag, blamed it on the communists, it was an inside job. It was a false flag attack. They blamed it on their political opposition, so that they could pass the Enabling Act. Many, many, many folks have said 9/11 was our Reichstag event. An inside job, a false flag attack, blamed on our political enemies to be able to use the catalyzing catastrophic event and the political capital gained and the fear to be able to do what they wanted to do in the first place. So as another media reference, it's like the vampire. You got to invite the vampire in. And as we've noted throughout this episode, this all continues to escalate as long as we tacitly approve, as long as we go along with it, as long as we just say yes. So as I've said now, we ran out of time. We did not get to all the news. So now, of course, it begs for a B-side episode from MediaMonarchy.com, because we've got the latest BioWars and swine flu updates to go over, 9/11 updates, U.S. military war horrors and recruitment, murder and mayhem and history and mystery, and so much more. But that's going to do it for episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com. That's right, it's time for your favorite segment at the very end of the episode, as the record turns over. Creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. I track visitors to the website through my stat counter. And when you trade in this type of alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, you're going to attract some interesting visitors to your website. So it's a quick list, but it's always quite fascinating. Marshall University, out of Huntington, West Virginia, they were visiting MediaMonarchy.com. Fascinatingly enough, just moments after I had posted my interview last week with Peter Lavenda, the author of Sinister Forces, The Department of Homeland Security out of Springfield, Virginia, Googled Peter Lavenda Sinister Forces download. Now, is that a coincidence? Most of the hits that I get from the shady spook sites, it usually says no referring link, meaning they've bookmarked MediaMonarchy.com. Like Lockheed Martin out of Denver, Colorado, or Fort Lewis, lewis.army.mil, or again, Homeland Security, Peter Lavenda, Sinister Forces. The Navy Network Information Center out of Arlington. This morning we had FEMA out of Springfield. They were reading the Police State International posting on FBI, DMV, FEMA, NORAD, APF, and more. We also had the Battelle Memorial Institute and all their shady connections coming out of Columbus, Ohio. And again, the Navy Network Information Center, this time out of Alexandria, Virginia. So I hope the spooks enjoy the show, spread the word, help me out. We're fighting the info war. We're nonviolent, not a part of any group. I spread news and information that's publicly available. It's all open source. It's all there for you. Get it and share it. My friends, this has been episode 145 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's October 16th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com. Telling you, begging you, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.